Hi, this is David Orlowski, and welcome to the Ravi Orlowski Show. Whether you watch with our friends over at Torah Anytime, or wherever you watch or listen to your podcast, as always, it's nice to have you along for the experience. And we have a sponsor for this week's episode. And this episode is sponsored. Thank you for enhancing our Shabbos preparations and our Maleva Malka with your Divrei Torah and Divrei Chizik, Yehuda and Chana Kravitz. Thank you for making it possible for many other people to for us to get together and share Chizik. You know, when I speak, I very often speak to myself. I remember hearing a story about this Mashkiach who had a special shtender he would use when he'd give a Masa Shmuz. And he kept it locked up in his office. And he would take it out. That's the only one he would use when he gave a Masa Shmuz, and then he would put it back in and lock it up. So after he was nifta, they opened up the closet and they saw that on the top of the shtender was a mirror. Because ultimately, when you give Musa, it's only effective if you give it to yourself. People who say, you need to change, and you people, and you, and you, and you, is nowhere as effective as when you say we. And when we do it together, yeah, it becomes that much more effective. I have a box of records, LPs, for those of you who appreciate the reference. Before there was downloads, there were CDs. Before there were CDs, there were cassettes. Before there were cassettes, there were records, these little vinyl discs that had the music on it, and you would play it. And I haven't brought myself to get rid of them, nor can I find a record player. But one of them was the comedy album put out by Don Knotts. I have an eclectic collection, as you might imagine. And it's some of his routines. He was a comedian before he became well known for his role on the Andy Griffith Show as Barney, the sheriff. Deputy. And he did a number of films and things. I think he ended up on some sitcoms, but these were just his comedy routines. Anyway, he's a politician who's waiting as the results are coming in. And with each report, his lead is getting lower and lower until it's very close. And he says, okay, this is the final result. You know, remember, we did this together. We did this, all right? We made this victory take place. I lost? You did this. This is your fault. What were you thinking? So, you know, when it comes to take, you know, there's an expression that success has many fathers, but failure is an orphan. And I was in running a organization. And some of my higher ups would take credit for things that I did without giving me credit for it. And some people inside of the organization were worried for me. And they said, listen, this guy is taking your accomplishments and touting them as his own. I said, good, because then I become more invaluable to him. And it's in his best interest to make sure that I'm successful. The more people who are basing themselves on my success. So, when things go wrong, you know, then nobody is responsible. Nobody wants to hear about it. So, so that's why when you talk about giving Musa, you could look at it as you, or you could look at it as us. When it's us, it's always that much more effective. So the chizik and the ideas that I share are just as much for me as for anybody else. Somebody said to me once, why do you laugh at your own jokes? And I said, because I enjoy them as much or more than you do. I crack myself up constantly. I'm always making myself laugh, you know, with funny observations and stuff. And some of my kids have picked it up. It's not a great midah, I should point out. But I look at people and I think, what's their story? How did they become that way? Where did they come from? What's their deal? You know. So some of my children have this sort of strange sense of humor, you know, and they'll be with me and they'll say, what do you think? What was he thinking when he got dressed this morning? You know, did he not realize that bright orange is not like the best color for him? You know, or doesn't that lady realize that when you're blonde, you shouldn't wear everything in yellow? Like it just, you know, you come out like looking like butter. I don't know. Listen, I'm not here to criticize anybody. I just, you look and you observe. And that's the whole area known as observational comedy. But it's based on looking at what, you know, you see and seeing the humor in it and allowing yourself to step into it. And you say, what happened over here? What was the story? That was one of my favorite things when I was a kid. They would show you a picture and they would ask a bunch of questions. Why did the person do this? Why do you think the person did this? It's all speculation on your part, you know? I graduated high school after 11th grade. And so I had to make up one English credit. So I went to summer school in public school. As you can imagine, this is not like the best and the brightest who are being assembled there. And it was 6 weeks. So I took 2 3-week courses and 1 6-week course. The 6-week course was drama. And the only character most of these guys were able to play would have been Stanley Kowalski in The Streetcar Named Desire. They were not like versatile actors. So I remember we performed Thornton Wilder's Our Town. And I had, of course, the largest role, which was the narrator. And other people, they would take their little book up and read it, you know. I am amazed at how things got. I, of course, went home and memorized my entire part and came in costume. I was way beyond. But one of the courses, I think it was called Cities, if I recall correctly. Anyway, there was a book of pictures. And the question was, take out 3 pictures from the book and based on these pictures of cities, write an essay on what you, as an alien looking at these 3 pictures, conclude a city is. So there was a picture of a toddler in one of those swings that, you know, with the chains and the thing to hold them in, and somebody doing that. There were 3, there were two people playing chess behind this iron fence. You know, those spiked iron fences like they have sometimes, metalwork. I forgot what the third one was. Kids playing ball in a playground, you know, with the chain link fence around it. And I said, based on these pictures, clearly a city is a prison. And I did a whole analysis of the pictures, why that should be. Anyway, there was one other kid there, a Jewish kid, who was also, had a IQ higher than a Neanderthal. And he said, you took those 3 pictures out of context. You, this and that, it's not a fair description. You chose that. I said, the assignment was to choose 3 pictures and based upon this, come to a conclusion. Yeah. So he says, yeah, but that was selective, this and that. And I defended myself. And the teacher, who of course thought I was brilliant, I can't say I disagreed. He says, why are you defending yourself against him? You wrote a brilliant essay. And I said, why am I defending myself against you? I wrote a brilliant essay. I was only 16, but I already had the makings of what Rabbi Olowski would eventually turn into. Yeah, nature versus nurture. Yeah, they both were there. But anyway, so you look at something and you see it. I've mentioned this before. One of the finest compliments I ever got was from a fellow who was a barrister in England. He's a high-level attorney. And he gave it up to become a storyteller. a questionable career move. And he would go around to fairs and parks and things, and he would tell stories and pass around the hat and collect it. That he was doing this just to find meaning. Eventually, he came to Israel. He became frum, and he used to come to my shiurim. So it's always fun when someone who has dedicated his life to doing something like this, I mentioned in the last podcast, Mordechai Shmutter came to listen to me. You know, and here's a fellow who has to write comedy columns for a living, you know, coming to listen to me, and I'll see what I'm doing. So it's a lot of fun. But anyway, so he said, he went through my share. He says, what you do is hold up a funhouse mirror to life. You see yourself, but you're so distorted that you have to laugh. That's the idea. That's if you can look at life and see those little twists and observations. Anyway, so this is a very long introduction to the fact that, yeah, I also get chizik from this podcast. And since I lost all my jobs to my wit and personality, this is basically all I do. You know, I just, for an hour a week, I sit here and I talk. Now, the truth is, I do this all week. I just sit here in this chair in front of this bookcase, and I just keep talking. It's just they film it for an hour a week, but I could probably put out like 100 of these in the course of a week, just me just sitting and talking. You know, somebody said to me, oh, there's a guy in Turney Time, you know, he has hundreds and hundreds of recordings. I said, yeah, he just keeps the recording going, you know. Here's dinner with Rabbi so-and-so. Here he is driving in the car, you know. One time I recorded a shiur and I forgot to turn it off, you know, and the second half of the shiur is me driving home talking to my kids, you know, and it's probably should not get out there because it was one of those, what did you think about this guy? Where did you see this over here? What was he thinking? All right. So if you were with us last time, then you know that we're in a series through Pesach, wherein the tour says there is an Atbash where you can show that the day of the week that Aleph of Pesach, the first day of Pesach comes out, will be the same as Tav, which is Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av will come out the same night. So if the Seder night this year is coming out Monday night, that means Tisha B'Av will be Monday night. And the Beis is the Shin. So if the second day of Pesach begins on a Tuesday night, then the Shin, which is Shavuos, will begin on a Tuesday night this year. That, for you in America, or in Chutz La'aretz in general, will be difficult. I sometimes forget my English, Australian, and South African listeners, take them into account. And of course, since this is on Torah Anytime, those in Mozambique, I have to always mention them, to follow along. But if you're outside of Eretz Yisrael, that means your Shavuos is going to be Wednesday and Thursday, and then you have an Erev Shabbos and a Shabbos. So, we here have only one day. So it'll be Tuesday night, Wednesday, and then we have 2 days to get ready for Shabbos, a little easier. But anyway, so I offered a supposition last week, and the supposition that I offered was that it's not merely a mnemonic device, but there must be some relationship between the first day of Pesach and Tisha B'Av. That's what we talked about last time. If I'm right, like I say, I just made this up, then the second day of Pesach should correspond to Shavuos. There should be something inherent in the second day. So let's see if that's true. What is the second day of Pesach? Oh, so you know, in the good old days, when there was a Beis HaMikdash, and men were men, and women were women, and Kohanim were Kohanim, yeah, and things were as they were supposed to be, what was the second day of Shavuos, of Pesach? Second day of Pesach, they would offer the Korban Omer. They would go and cut the barley. Barley was the first crop that ripened, and it was still didn't have a chance to dry out. Grain needs a chance to dry out. And that's why the wheat harvest begins on Shavuos. That's why we bring the Stei Lechem from the wheat on Shavuos. But the wheat harvest begins on Shavuos. And after they harvest and thresh and winnow, they leave the grain out in the field all summer to dry, because otherwise it will rot and it needs to dry. Now, obviously, if you don't live in a place where the climate's like Eretz Yisrael, where it's dry in the summer, it proves more problematic. And that's why if it rains, you have to make sure and cover over the grain or it will get wet and get ruined. That is the dramatic scene in Far From the Maddening Crowd by Hardy, where the guy who is her true love, right? But not the one that she marries, because everybody in Hardy novels are unhappy. So it's about to rain. It's going to be a thunderstorm. And she, you know, her new husband had just made a big party, and all the workers were drunk, and he was the only one who was still sober. And he sees the storm coming, and he goes out by himself to try to thatch over all of the grain so it doesn't get ruined, to cover it over. And she comes out, and the two of them are standing there with the lightning beginning, understanding that they're a very good mark for the lightning to get killed. And they're just trying to cover it all over before the rain comes and ruins the grain. Similarly, as everyone knows, the Salem witch hunts, where they believed that there were witches, I read an article many years ago where someone suggests that they didn't store the grain properly, and as such, the grain got this sort of bacteria that was a hallucinogenic, and that's what caused them when they ate, you know, the bread that they made from this wheat, which had these drugs in them, they thought they saw witches and people flying, and it really wasn't true. Okay. So you have to store it. So the barley ripens first, but it's still not dried out. So they would have to roast it, a special kli where they would roast it and then grind it. And because barley flour is not considered the good bread, it's considered low-level bread. Barley was basically seen as animal fodder. Anyone who's ever watched people eat chalent, you understand what I'm talking about. But so they would sift it seven times, and they would get the purest barley wheat, and they would make the omer offering, and they would bring it in the base of Mikdash. And this allowed the rest of the Jewish people to now eat from the new crop. Until then, it's also to eat from the new crop because it's chadash. After that, it's now the chadash becomes permissible. You can eat from the new crop until the new harvest comes onto the market. These are the people who today are careful not to eat yashan. This is the iser d'oraisa that they're dealing with. I say iser d'oraisa, the Bach holds only in Eretz Yisrael. In Chutz La'aretz, there is a heter that he uses to be able to eat chadash. And there are people who are more makbid on it today. There was a time when you didn't have to worry about this. And that's because FDR brought up the wheat harvest for many years. We had 7 years of harvest. So no one ever ate from the new wheat. That's why no one ever heard of yashan. And then Richard Nixon in the early 70s, there was a famine in Russia and he sold the entire wheat surplus. And after that, the problem came in of chadash being on the market. That's why when people say, when I was growing up, I never heard about yashan. Yeah, because you never had any chadash. Now it's a new situation. So the law doesn't change. The situation changes. And when the road curves with it, or you fall off the cliff. Anyway, but that's what the second day of Shavuos is that they bring the new Omer. And then the Torah says, after you bring the Omer, count 49 days. 7 days, seven times, until you come to the 50th day. It does not call it Shavuos. It just calls it Yom HaChamishim. And very interesting, Parshas Emor. Yeah? You can find Shavuos mentioned in other places, because there are different Parshios where the Shalosh Regolim are mentioned, the three pilgrimage holidays, Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot. But no places are called Chag Matan Torah. And it's called Chag HaKatzir. It's called Chag HaBikurim. It's called Shavuos. And in Emor, which the Rambam calls Parshas HaMoedim, that's the complete Moedim, it's called Yom HaChamishim. Here's how the Torah presents it. You'll bring the Omer offering made out of barley on the second day of Pesach. Then you'll count 49 days. And on the 50th day, you'll bring a wheat offering. That's the Shelechem. The only public offering that is chametz. There's another one, and that is when you bring a Korban Todah, there are 40 loaves of bread, and 10 of the loaves of bread are chametz. But other than that, there's no chametz. The Beis HaMikdash was Pesedik, except for these two loaves of bread that were chametz that were brought on Shavuos. So this much is clear. On the second day of Shavuos, we start counting to Shavuos. So it makes sense that the base of Pesach corresponds to Shavuos, because the whole day is the beginning of the count to Shavuos. That's the preparation. Immediately after Pesach, Yom HaCharosai, the next day, you start counting to Shavuos. What's the concept of Sfiras Omer? What's the concept of this counting to be able to get there? And why does the Torah present it in the terms of the second day of Pesach when you bring your barley offering, and on the 50th day after that when you bring your wheat offering? Now, I should point out, because of this, Shavuos is the only yontif that does not have a date in the Torah. On Pesach, says you'll shech to Korban Pesach on the 14th of Nisan, and you'll eat it on the 15th of Nisan. And that's Pesach. Shvi Shel Pesach gives you the date. Yeah? Sukkot on the 15th of Tishrei. Yom Kippur on the 10th of the month. Rosh Hashanah on the 1st of the month. Yeah? The Torah gives names. The only one that doesn't have a date is Shavuos. It's the 50th day. And therefore, today our calendar is set. And so it comes out on Vav Sivan, right? Because make Nisan 30 days and we make Iyar 29 days. But when they used to rely on Adim to determine, it could be both of those months with 29 days. Could be both of them with 30 days. Which means that Shavuos could have come out on the 5th, 6th, or 7th of Sivan. We have it set, the calendar, but it doesn't have a date. It's only defined as the 50th day and the day when you bring the wheat offering. So let's understand what that means. What it means is, as Rabbi Kalish from Waterbury always tells his boys, respect the process. There's a process that you have to go through in order to become the people you're going to become. I remember I spoke in one of the schools I spoke in, was a school for, you know, guys who have issues. Yeah, issues with their frumkeit. And they're struggling, you know. And I pointed out, you're the ones who are in yeshiva. Your friends are not. So you are the ones who are the committed ones, you know. Anyway, I spoke. It was so interesting. They said to me, they'll listen maybe 10, 15 minutes and don't be upset if they talk or they play on their phones or whatever it is, you know, because, you know, they're not used to sitting through speeches. I spoke for a half an hour. Nobody said a word. They all listened closely and were deeply moved. In fact, when I had to get to my next speech, I didn't take into account hugging time because these guys wanted to give me a hug afterwards because, you know, apparently they liked what I had to say. But one guy said, I'm going to start a movement here in the yeshiva on the derech. And I said, you're all on the derech. Everybody's on the derech. Some people get to travel on a superhighway, and some people have to take a dirt road. But everybody here is on a derech. Everybody's road may be different, but you're never off. There's no such thing as off the derech, not until you're dead. As long as you're alive, you're on a derech. You'll see where it takes you. But everybody has their own journey. So you try to check your ticket, and you don't know what it means. Well, I get to sit on velvet and dine on fine cuisine. Or is my lot to sit on a hard wooden bench, wooden seat with just a dry crust of bread to eat? Something along those lines. A.B. Rottenberg's, everyone rides the train. Now, everyone gets on the train. Some people are in first class, some people are not. So everybody's on the road. Some people have an easier road, and some people have a harder road, but everyone has a road. Anyway, so respect the process. We came out of Mitzrayim, and we were on the 49th level of Tumah. And in order to get to Har Sinai and receive the Torah, we had to move up 49 levels. That was our journey. It took us 7 weeks to get there because every day we had to work on a different midah and a different aspect of our avodas Hashem that we needed to perfect. That's where we were going. That's what we had to accomplish. So when a person says, I remember this, in Parsha Shmos, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu right away, I'm taking them out of Mitzrayim to bring them to this mountain and give them the Torah. So getting the Torah was part and parcel of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And it's one of the four Lashonos of Geula. Yeah, I'm going to make you my people. That's the fourth step. And so Har Sinai was an integral part. Ad kedei kach, that the Ramban says that the whole Sviras HaOmer period is basically like a big Chol Moed. From the second day of Pesach, once we get out of Mitzrayim, we start the preparation. We go out of Mitzrayim, and we're going to come to Har Sinai and get the Torah. Yeah, on the 50th day. This world is obviously indicated by the number 7. Yeah, there's 6 days, and Shabbos, which is the seventh day that fills that box that we call the universe, that fills it up. That's always what 7 is. Yeah, you work for 6 years, and on the 7th year, you'll eat what you've worked with. 6 days a week you work, and on Shabbos you enjoy it. That's 7. So we go through 7 sevens, that's all we can do, positively and negatively. We only fell to the 49th level of Tumah because that's it. That's as much as we can do, fall all the way down. Nebuchadnezzar Baruch Hu lets us go, so then there's nothing left, but we can do a tremendous amount of damage, and we have to repair that. But that 50th level we have to get from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's Matana. Yeah? Gati umatsasi mehemna. If I worked very hard and I received the Matana. What do you mean receive the Matana? I earned it. No. Matan Torah at the end of the day is a gift. You can't do this on your own. This is similar to what the Masil Sharm describes in Perek Chavav at the end with Kedusha. He says, part of Kedusha is what you do, and the rest is Gemul, a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the 50th is outside of this world. And that's why you count 7 years seven times until you come to the Yovel. And the Yovel is out of this world. All the slaves go free. All the land goes back. Everything is done. And says the Alshech, we don't start counting people to the age of 20, right? And then it says to Hillel, the average life of a person is 70 years, which means your life is a yovel. And if you work those 49 years and you come to the 50th year, you move into a different world. You move to a different place. And that's what, that's the average lifespan. If you're 80, I remember when I turned 60, somebody said to me, well, 60 is not old. I said, Mishnah in Pirkei Avos disagrees with you. It says, Shishim Lezikna, Shivim Leseva, you're very old. Shmonim Legvura, you must be really strong because we're surprised you're still here. Tishim Leshuach, you're bent over and broken. And 100, as far as we're concerned, you're already dead. I don't know what you're still doing here. So that's it. Going by the normal functioning, I am halfway through the last decade of my life. After that, you go into overtime. Yeah. So that's what I always think. It says, Shmonim Legvura, we're really surprised you're still here. So George Burns died just shy of his 100th birthday. He had booked a big show on his 100th birthday, and he said, I already have my opening line. Ladies and gentlemen, it's a pleasure to be here. At my age, it's a pleasure to be anywhere. you know, you're already ultimate oilam. You don't count anymore at 100, you know. So, of course, by Gedolei Torah, they play by different rules, right? Rabbi Akiva made it to 120. Moshe made it to 120. You know, 120 is a different kind of a, you know, beyond 100. I always thought that maybe you start counting at 20 and you get two yovels. That's what 120 is. But Rav Tzvi Kishelevsky just had a baby boy, just had a bris at the age of 88. He'll be 101 at the bar mitzvah. Mitzvah Hashem, so Zayge Zutin Shtark. So, someone said, do you think he's going to make it to the bar mitzvah? I said, if you can have a baby at 88, you can have a bar mitzvah at 101. it's the same exact equation. So anyway, so the idea is that you reach the 50th day. That's outside of this world. So you understand what we're doing? We came out of Egypt and we had to work. We had to do 49 days to get there. That's what Sfiras HaOmer is. And that's why the beginning of Sfiras HaOmer is Nisan, and the end of Sfiras HaOmer is Sivan. There's only one month that is completely Sfiras HaOmer. That's Iyar. And as the Ur Gedalia points out, Nisan is Tle, it's the sheep. And Sivan is Gemini, yeah, the twins. And Iyar is Taurus, the bull, or as we say, the shore, the ox. And he says, why? He says, when we came out of Mitzrayim, we were like a sheep. We didn't deserve to be freed. The Yamsuf says, why should I save these people? Hem of the Avodah Zarah, Hem of the Avodah Zarah. The Jews didn't really deserve to be. We had to give them a mitzvah. You know, B'damaya Chayi gave him Bris Mila, gave him Korban Pesach, a reason, a mitzvah to be taken out. But we didn't deserve it. To Umim means that us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu got married at Har Sinai. The two of us came together as adults. How do you get there? Through the shore. You have to work like an ox. And that's what Sfiras HaOmer is. Sfiras HaOmer is the process of working in order to be able to accomplish that we can stand at Har Sinai. The Yom HaMishim is out of this world. That I can't be responsible for. And the way we do this is by starting with the barley offering and ending with the wheat offering. Barley is animal food. And we come out on the lowest level like an animal, and we have to spend 7 weeks to turn ourselves into a mensch. And that's why the Sfiras HaOmer is the Derech Eretz Kadma LaTorah. And that's why the Bali Musa say that the Memches Dvarim, The 48 things you need to be Kona Torah is what we're supposed to be working on these 49 days. 48, 49. That's because the last day you now have to chaza them all over and bring them all together and make them one. Yeah, but every day we're working on one of these midos in order to be able to make ourselves into the people who are going to be roi to be mekabel Torah. Hashem couldn't give us a Torah. There were no people to give it to. We had to take ourselves and turn ourselves into people, into mention. So the second day of Pesach is the beginning of the process that concludes with Shavuos. That's the Bash. That's the Beis Shin. That's why Shavuos comes out on the same day of the week as the second day of Pesach, because that's when we begin the process of preparing for Shavuos. Okay. And next time we'll do Rosh Hashanah. And now let's talk about the question and answer. The question and answers by Yaakov Mordechai Sussman. Do you actually not use a green screen? If so, can you take a safer out of the shelves during the show, please?
Sure I can.
Oh, look. Lavos Eish, which is, of course, written by my good friend, Rabbi Foya. Foya is fire. Eish, get it? Here's my Sefer Chavetz Chaim by the day, which is so ripped up, I had to tape it back together. This is my Rishonim shelves. And these are my fancy Mishnayos and more Rishonim. This was the first Shas I got. Bought it for $35 in 1974 from Z. Berman. Rabbi Whale encouraged us to buy Svarim, and I bought a Shas. It has been through the mail. This is the little Shas that I bought, because David Kaplan used to keep it in a box on his desk, and when someone would ask him a question, he would lift it up and say, I've got shas on my fingertips. I can't actually use this because I can't see it even with my glasses. This is my chasen shas that my father-in-law got me, and v'kach hala. So yeah, it's all real. It's all real. Just like my muscles. So. I think more work went into lifting the svarim than my muscles, but okay. Next question. Okay, we took a number of questions and put them all together because they're basically the same question in different forms. Reminds me that Baruch Rabinowitz, when he was helping me in NCSY in Long Island, so one Sunday morning he did a question and answer for the kids, and everybody submitted questions. And he took all the Pesachim and he says, okay, I'm going to divide this into two piles. Those that are asking about Nagia and everything else. The Nagia pile was larger. He says, okay, I'll deal with these first and then we'll deal with this. So these are all basically the same question. It's not about Nagia. Yeah, by anonymous, how does one learn self-control? How can someone break the midah of overeating? What's the best way to control a taiva in general? These are three separate questions, but, you know, it's the same you cite. The first thing that I think is so incredibly important is that you have to want to. Everyone knows this. Someone who has an eating problem, yeah, and doesn't want to seriously change it, they will not be successful. They just won't. And that's true about every taiva. If a person just doesn't care, they may pay the lip service of saying they care. They might even feel guilty afterwards, but they're not prepared to actually change themselves. As the old joke goes, how many psychologists does it take to change a light bulb? One, but only if the light bulb wants to change. I have a friend, Ivan Lerner, who's a psychiatrist. It's just a social relationship. But he said to me that, you know, people come to me for help. And after a couple of sessions, I see they're not serious. And I say, listen, I'm not going to see you anymore. And the person says, why? I'm paying. He says, you could decide at some point that I'm not helping you and end this relationship. I can do the same thing. I would rather help people who really want to help themselves. You're not serious. You think you are. You're willing to go through the motions, but you're not really ready to change. And that's why I knew a young lady, and she started dating in Shidduchim when she was 18. And when she turned 40, she says, "Now I think I'm really ready to get married." I mean, she was dating, but she wasn't really into it. She says, "Now I think I'm really ready." That year she got engaged. A person has to, first of all, really want to change, because change is very hard. And if you don't really want to do it, you're just wasting your time. Don't even try. Just not even try. Because who am I kidding? You know? I remember seeing an email once that said, "I miss going to the gym today." That makes 4 years. Okay, see, you're clearly not really serious about it. You know? Michael Freeman, who used to run the Harnoff Men's Gym, he says, every now and then you'd see a guy come into the gym, and I could tell right away whether they're going to be successful or not, because they're not serious. And they may even come in and look like a gym rat. You know, they got all the outfits and the things, and they work really hard and da-da-da, you know. And he says, I know they're not going to last. It's a phase. He says, oh, I see people come in and they're on the machines, you know, schlepping along a little bit. They're not really pushing themselves. They're not going to succeed. And sure enough, they give up because they're not getting anywhere, you know. It's the same thing with dieting. There are people who diet, and then any reason is a reason to go off their diet. Well, as one person said to me, I'm not opposed to eating healthy food as long as I can have, you know, my other food as well. So first you have to really want it. You have to be honest, because change is very hard. And if not, don't. You're just going to reinforce in yourself the fact that I can't change. Now, I had a machlekes with Michael, because Michael said you have to have a positive attitude. And I have a negative attitude, a terribly negative attitude about most things, but certainly about exercising. I hate exercising. I hate the exercise clothing. I hate going to the gym. I hate sweating. I hate working out. I hate every aspect of it. I don't mind when I was developing muscles. In fact, at one point I said to him, I said, my shirt is tight on me. And he says, yeah, because you've developed back and chest muscles, which you never had. And so you're filling up your shirt. Usually you only fill up the belly part. Now you're filling up the top part. I thought, oh my gosh, what a frightening concept. So I said, you know, my goal, you know, it says your goal should be to get yourself into shape and to be healthy. I said, my goal is to look like Captain America. I don't have to look like Thor. That's already, you know, beyond the pale. But I'd be happy with Captain America. I just don't want to look like Ant-Man, you know. But so he used to say to me, no, really, you enjoy it. I said, I hate it. I hate everything about it. I'm doing it because intellectually I know I need to, but not because I want to. And he says, no, you know. And Rabbi Dr. David Gottlieb from Or Sameach, he was on the treadmill. He was a professional runner at one point, apparently, because he's just running on that treadmill, you know. Now he's a philosopher, you understand? You know, he's got his degree in philosophy, you know. So he says, look, Rabbi Gottlieb enjoys it, right? And Rabbi Gottlieb, as he's running, not out of breath at all, he able to hold the conversation. He goes, if they came out with a pill tomorrow that would guarantee perfect health without me advertising, without my exercising, I would stop it immediately. I said, one for me. You don't have to be happy about it. You don't have to enjoy it, but you have to be dedicated. You have to be serious, you know? When I first started losing weight, you know, someone came over to me and said, what's the secret, you know? And I said, I had diabetes, and I got diagnosed with diabetes. I said, you have to really believe you're going to die. And if you really believe you're going to die, then it's not cosmetic, and it's not because you're tired of buying your clothes from the big man shop, or if you're in worse shape, you know, Ahmed the tent maker, you know what I mean? Like, you know, it's not because of that. You know, I've continued to lose weight, Baruch Hashem. Yeah. And it gets me crazy when people say to me, wow, you're really skinny, or you're really thin. I said, no, I was morbidly obese. And then I moved down to obese. And now I'm just fat. I said, you know, if you can't tell the difference between me, you know, and Stan Laurel, I said, who is skinny, then you really need to get your eyes examined. You know what I mean? No, I'm less fat than I was, but I'm nowhere thin. You know, and maybe one day I'll get there. But after my heart attack, I was being more careful what I ate, and I was exercising more, you know. But I had a strong determination. I didn't want to die, you know. So this person said to me, what's the secret? I said, you have to really believe you're going to die. He goes, what do you mean? I said, I had a heart attack and a bypass, and I have this, and I have diabetes. He goes, oh, okay, you're right. Then that doesn't apply to me. I'm just doing it for cosmetic reasons, you know. So, okay. So if you're a dilettante when it comes to trying to change something, you know, or there are people who do certain avarias and they say, yeah, I really want to stop, but they don't really want to stop. I was at an Israel night, and every yeshiva was presenting, you know, about their school. And I remember the person who was representing the Beit Zion at the time says, you know, all these yeshivas are for guys who want to learn. Our yeshiva is for the guy who wants to want to learn. He doesn't want to learn, but he wants to want to learn. So there are a lot of people who say, I want to change a midah, I want to change a taiva, I want to this. They don't really want to. They're enjoying it too much. But they want to. That's the first step. First step is you have to reach the point where you are committed. And that's why there are people who have to mamish hit whatever their rock bottom is until they're ready to do something about it. Like the scene with Jean Valjean after the bishop shows him his kindness. And he's on the road and he's sitting there and this little kid is flipping a coin and it falls and Jean Valjean puts his foot on it. And the kid says, hey, mister, give me my coin. And he says, beat it. And he says, come on, mister, give me my coin. And he goes, beat it. And the kid runs off crying. And he looks at him and he says, I've become so miserable. Hence the name La Miserable. Yeah, I became miserable, the miserable. And he determines based on that event to change his whole life around, and he does. So you have to reach a point in your life where you have an epiphany and you say, I'm serious about it this time. My father, Ovi Shalom, who as it happened at the end, when he passed away, so his oncologist came to pay a shiva call and someone said, would you say it was from the smoking? Said, well, he had lung cancer, heart disease, and emphysema. I'm going to have to say yes on that. Yeah. But he really wanted to quit, but he couldn't. Just couldn't. And he said once, it's easy to quit smoking. I've done it hundreds of times. The same thing. There are people who have tried to lose weight, but they're not, you know, that determined. Now, I'm going to cut everybody who's overweight some slack. Because your body has a certain set weight that it has. You have to figure out some way to change your settings in your body. And that's why over 90% of people who lose weight gain it back with interest. Why? Because your body thinks that you've just gone through a period of famine. That's why there was no food. And it just keeps releasing hormones that tell you you are starving. So it's not that people who are fat don't have willpower. It's that the people who manage to keep off the weight have super willpower. But you have to, you know, really work very hard to overcome that. That's why most people lose weight and then gain it back with interest. Whereas if they never dieted, they never would. So what method is effective? Unfortunately, the only proven methods I've found, because I've never met anyone who can stay on a diet for extended period of time and be successful. There is maybe 10%. 90% of the people can't. There's only two things that have proven successful that I have seen. One is the gastric bypass operation, which I am loath to recommend. I know a number of people who have done it and they lost the weight and kept it off. I know other people who have done it and became very sick. I know other people who have done it and gained the weight back, even though you're left with a tiny little stomach. But, you know, if you work hard, you know, you work hard, you can accomplish almost anything. You know, you got to really put in the effort. So that's one. The other one that seems to become very popular today is taking Ozempic. Now, I pointed out that I've been losing weight, but I get Ozempic because I'm a diabetic. And at some point, people figured out that it also helps you lose weight. And more people are coming forward that they're taking this or similar medications that help them to lose weight. And being overweight is unhealthy. And so if you take this, now, I cannot testify to the side effects, but if you're going to lose through one of the dieting methods, you need an iron will. Having said that, there are certain things that you can do to help it, i.e., don't hang around the kitchen. Don't keep junk food in the house. If you only buy healthy food and you're careful to avoid carbs and high fat food, then if you do binge, it'll be on grilled chicken cutlets, mastama, you'll be okay. Keep a lot of vegetables. There's a very difficult diet that is definitely successful. I was on it for a few months. I went off of it because we fat people always find an excuse to go off it. So I went off of it for Rosh Hashanah, and then I never got back on. It's the Dr. Furman diet, wherein you eat fruits, vegetables, nuts, seeds, and legumes. That's it. No meat, no chicken, no dairy, no cheese, no milk. You understand? No fish, no oil, nothing that makes your life happy. So what do you have? You have salads, and you have stir fries, and you have vegetable stews, and you have soups, which is basically just salad with water or more water or more water. Just how much water you add to your salad. If you add a lot, it's a soup. If you add a little bit, it's a stew. You don't add too much. Yeah. And he points out that one of the reasons people are overweight is because they're starving, because they eat foods that do not give them the essential nutrients that they need. So their body is literally starving. And the micronutrients that come in a lot of these vegetables, particularly cruciferous vegetables, you know, are essential for your body. And therefore, you need to eat them. So I would say, even if you introduced three salads a day and the healthier vegetables into your diet, and you eat the other chazarai that you're eating, at least that'll get you the nutrients you need and you won't be starving. He says people have toxic hunger on your diet. And this diet, you won't have toxic hunger. And it's true. I was sick for a week, but he says that's what happens because your body is cleansing. And then you will never feel toxic hunger, like you're starving. You'll be hungry, but I experienced that for 2 months. It was amazing. It's a lot of work, because vegetables take a lot of preparation and all these things. But, by other taivas, it's the same thing. You need the motivation. And then you have to say to yourself, if I'm going to have an internet or a television or go to movies or read certain periodicals, and you say, gee, why am I having trouble with Shemiras Einayim? Well, there's your answer. You need to free your atmosphere from these things. You know? The Gemara says someone who goes to the shuk, where there are women, even if they don't look at the women, they call it a rasha. Because why are you putting yourself in that kind of a situation? You know? The famous story with the Levi Eliyahu, where he says, his boy had to go and get something in town. He says, but aren't you worried there are women there? He says, I won't look. He says, how do you know you won't look? He goes, I trust myself. He says, you trust yourself? I'm 80 years old and blind in one eye, and I don't trust myself. And you're a young man with two good eyes, and you trust yourself? So it means don't put yourself in situations where you're going to be exposed to situations like that. Or, like I say, a person who has a trouble with cheeseburgers should not be sitting in McDonald's, even to use the Wi-Fi. You understand? Don't put yourself in situations. So in all of these issues, when it comes to controlling taivas, it comes down to the same yusayid, which is you have to really, really want to, and then you have to break it down into a method that I can use that'll be effective. And the third thing is you have to cut yourself some slack. No, nothing goes like this. The stock market doesn't go up like this. Nothing goes up like this. There's ups and downs. Sheva yipal tzaddik. The tzaddik falls seven times. You know? The trick is to keep getting back up. And if when you mess up, you give up, yeah, that's why set reasonable goals and accept that you're going to fall. And that's where Cheshbon HaNefesh comes so in handy. Write down every time I was successful, every time I was not successful, and count how many times I was successful at this, overcoming this taiva, overcoming this problem, and how many times did I fail. And that's true about everything. You know, we go back to the mushroom of the food. So write down everything you eat during the day, everything, because people are not conscious. People say, man, I didn't eat anything today. It's almost never true. But that's what they believe. They really believe it. So these are a few helpful advice and tips that hopefully will help you with your taivas. And that's it for this week. If you want to find out more about the show, you can go to my website, rabbiolowski.com. You can leave a comment, ask a question. You can join one of my online shiurim. You can read one of my articles. And that's it for now. You could sponsor an episode. We could always use sponsorships. Yeah. And that's it for now. Until next time, I am David Orlovsky, and this has been the Rabbi Orlovsky Show.
It's the Rabbi Orlovsky Show. Torah and Simcha, ready to go. The Rabbi Orlovsky Show. Knowledge and wisdom will help you grow. Lots of fun in every episode, and we don't have to rhyme. No, we don't. It's the Rabbi Orlovsky Show on RabbiOrlovsky.com. Torah, anytime, YouTube, and more. It's the Rabbi Orlovsky Show. Torah and Simcha, ready to go. It's the Rabbi Orlovsky Show. Till next time, till we meet again. It's the Rabbi Orlovsky Show. It's the Rabbi Orlovsky Show. It's the Rabbi Orlovsky Show.